All right. So thank everyone for coming. And I want to give it this year. I'm going to give tonight is probably for a lot of us, it's reviewing familiar ideas, but you know, I think they're important ideas, which it's always good to get some review on. And for some of us, maybe it'll be some new ideas. But before I get to that, I want to... Maybe you can hit mute, please. Okay, so before I get to that, I want to talk a little bit about my mother, Aleha Shalom. And specifically, as Zahava sent out the link to that letter which she had written us. So I want to talk about a part of the letter and connect it to something else connected to this year. So the letter, as maybe you've seen, or at some point, this is the letter my mother wrote to us before she had some major surgery. So a few years before she passed away. And she called it Some Thoughts on Happiness. It was just an email that she sent to us. It was a potentially risky surgery. And this is what she wanted to share with us, some thoughts on happiness. And I think it's interesting altogether that that was the topic which she decided to write to us about. And I never really thought about that before, but this year when I was looking at it, I was just kind of thinking, this is the letter she wanted to write to us, some thoughts on happiness. So I think it's telling that, as many of you know, at least physically, my mother had a difficult life. She had her struggles with her health. But, and I think this is something which is striking to anyone who knew her or knew about her difficulties, she was the happiest person. Okay, she was always a person who was very happy. And I think she must have realized that despite the fact that she had difficulties, which if anyone would have had the types of challenges that she would have, they'd be depressed and saddened. And because she even mentioned sometimes she talked to her friends and they'd be, you know, complaining about different woes that were almost nothing compared to the struggles which she had. But it didn't in any way, probably a lot of you don't even know what she went through, because she just always was happy. And I think she must have figured that she had some insight into some thoughts on happiness. And as such, it would be like what she wanted to convey to us or some of the tricks which she picked up along the way. And that's, you know, I think it's telling, and I thought it would, as such, it would be nice for us to look into. One thought which I think was especially meaningful to most people I've spoken to who have read this, and that people have come over to me whenever I mention my mother, people have mentioned specifically one part of this letter which was striking, and I want to talk about it, and that was the following. It was already at the beginning. She wrote, and I'm just going to read a little bit. I just have a few words of motherly advice as you soar. It's not Torah Misinai that your father and Rabbeim have taught you well, and I in turn have learned much from you, but just some thoughts on happiness. Enjoy and cherish every day. Don't worry so much about tomorrow or what might or might not happen. Do the best you can. But if you focus your worry on tomorrow, it makes you lose today and tomorrow. If something bad is going to happen, it will happen. You won't be able to deny it. At least you have today. And so many wonderful things happen in today. If something bad or unexpected happens, you will deal with it. And so on. And I think this is that line, which I know is, I think is the most powerful, is that if you focus your worry on tomorrow, it makes you lose today and tomorrow. And I think that was one thing which she had, is she was always so able to focus on the present and to enjoy her blessings and to enjoy the good things that were in her life and not to be worried about what happened, what didn't happen, what will happen in the future, but to be able to appreciate and to enjoy the present and not to get caught up in the worries about the future or in the bad things which could have happened in the past, but just to be able to move on and to be happy. And like she's saying, so many good things happen in today. And I think for everybody, so many good things to do happen in today. We just kind of get bogged down by our memories of the past and our fears and our wishes and our plans and everything for the future. And sometimes we forget about the present and about enjoying the present. And she did. She recognized that she had a very good present and put aside all her worries and was able to be able to really be happy. And one thing I saw recently, Aliza showed me.
Can you ask somebody to put it on mute?
Okay, so not us, right? Okay, so there's a... What's that? Are we good?
Is it possible to move the phone?
Closer?
Move the phone closer to...
Yeah, how about that? I guess me closer to the phone is the same thing, right? We good? Is that a little better, Howie?
Sherry, yes.
Sherry. Okay, okay. Okay, so there's this, I don't know, somehow I found this in my house. At least I got it. I guess it's a special Time magazine, special edition, The Science of Happiness. Okay, so one article that Elisa showed me, which is a little bit related to this point that some others talking about, but it's kind of a segue between this and the shiur, which I want to talk about. So, you know, I'm going to read a little bit. It's about multitasking, okay, because I think there's a particular, I think it's particularly meaningful in a modern day society where we multitask so much, especially with technology and all that. So I'm going to read it'll be about a few minutes of reading, not that much, but I think it'll just give us a picture of what it's talking about. I'm sure we'll be familiar with what it's talking about. Okay, it says multitasking, instead of helping us accomplish more things faster, actually keeps us from doing anything well. When you are performing any individual task, if you are able to give it your undivided attention, you will accomplish it far more efficiently and quickly while also enjoying the process. When we are caught up in multitasking or preoccupied with the next thing we need to cross off the to-do list, not only are we harming our performance, we may be harming our well-being. One study found that the more people engage in media multitasking, the higher their anxiety and depression levels tend to be. If you are constantly being pulled in different directions, it is only natural you'll feel more stressed and overwhelmed. On the other hand, the research shows that when we are completely in tune with what we are doing, we more fully enjoy that activity. Moreover, being completely present allows us to enter a state of complete absorption that is extremely productive. Think of a time you were faced with a project you were dreading. You knew it would involve a lot of effort. Maybe you kept putting it off. Once you started, however, perhaps finally egged on by an impending deadline, you became engaged and the project just flowed. You found that you actually enjoyed the process. You became highly productive because you focused completely on the task at hand. Instead of being stressed about the future and having your attention pulled in different directions, you got the work done and done well, and you're happy to boot. According to a study of 5,000 people by psychologists Matthew Killingsworth and Daniel Gilbert of Harvard, adults spend only about 50% of their time in the present moment. In other words, we are mentally checked out half the time. In addition to measuring when people's minds were wandering, the scientists collected information on happiness levels. They found that when we are in the present moment, we are also at our happiest, no matter what we are doing. In other words, even if you are engaging in an activity you usually find unpleasant, you're happier when you are 100% consumed in that activity than when you're thinking about something else while doing so. One more paragraph. Why does the present make us happy? Because we fully experience the things going on around us. Instead of getting caught up in a race to accomplish more things faster, we slow down and are actually with the people we are with, immersed in the ideas being discussed, and fully engaged in our projects. And so on. So, this is like focusing on a related aspect of what my mother was talking about, which is that we're often not in the present. And there could be different reasons why we cannot be in the present and not being able to enjoy the things which we do in the present. And one is because of worry, which I think my mother was talking about. We have fears and all those types of things. And modern day, there's just the idea of multitasking with all of our, you know, cell phones and all the different things which we have. It's just very easy to be doing lots of different things instead of actually enjoying what we're doing, the things that come to us and people we spend time with, whether we're learning or davening or doing a mitzvah or hanging out with our kids or our spouses or whatever it is, eating, whatever. It's just, we're oftentimes checked out. And I think this is a sentiment which a lot of people know. I don't think this is a bit chiddush, but somehow it just, we can't really quite control it. And it just somehow, as the moments or as the days go on, we just always, this is like kind of people where we become addicted to technology and towards avoiding the present, towards multitasking and towards that tendency. And as such, I wanted to talk today a little bit of the shiur I wanted to discuss is a little bit about the idea of freedom. Okay? And the idea is the Torah, I will come back to this in a little bit, but there's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, or it's in the sixth Pirkei Avos, which says, Ein lecha ben choren ela mi she'osek b'Torah. Mitzvos. It says, no truly free person, but a person who's involved in Torah. And the idea is, I think it's, at first, a perplexing type of a statement. Because we oftentimes relate to mitzvahs and to Torah as somewhat of a burden, as something which takes our time and our energy, and it has restrictions. A person doesn't think, I want to do religion because it gives me freedom. On the contrary, one would think religion has restrictions. It might be meaningful, and it might be good for us, and it might be true and real, but to say that Torah gives us freedom, and not only is it saying it gives us freedom, it's saying there's no truly free person but a person who's involved in Torah. So that's even going a step further. It's not only a route to freedom, it's saying it's like the only route to true freedom. And that's interesting, surprising. It demands an explanation. Okay, so to do that, I want to question, why is it? What are the motivations of why we do the Torah, why we do mitzvahs? Okay, so, any ideas? Why do we do mitzvahs? What's the point? Right, sometimes it's good to kind of, you know, have a good idea of why we should do mitzvahs. Sounds like a good thing to think about every so often.
Way of life.
Okay, it's a way of life. It's a good way of life, or
a good way
of life? What's that?
A moral code.
Moral code? Okay, good.
To give you your best quality.
Okay. Good answer. Okay, well, how about this? Maybe ask me a different question. What are the different reasons you can imagine people doing this? Okay? Good reasons, bad reasons, whatever. Just the various reasons. Can we classify the types of reasons why? Yeah?
I would think it gives someone a very clear focus about their life and their perspective.
Okay. Good. Good. Okay. Someone else? Yeah? Hi, Al.
You have a belief that the Torah is divine, and
okay,
that what's set out in the Torah was given by the Creator, then that would motivate you to want to do what the guidebook, tells you to do.
So. Okay, good. You mean God said so?
Yeah.
And it's true, and He knows. Okay, good. Good. Someone else? Yes, Jesse?
We're brought up that way. It's supposed to be
brought up that way. Okay. Good. Okay. Someone else? Yes.
Well, I mean, most people want to do the right thing, but mitzvot kind of give us like a structure about how we feel about it.
Okay. Good. Good. That's a good idea. Yeah. Okay. So, in general, I just want to classify three types of reasons why a person could do mitzvot. Okay. And a lot of what you said fit into these three classes, but just in a general class. And To analogize, take an example of a child taking medicine, okay? Or a shot, medicine, whatever, right? Children don't usually want to take medicine, as most of us know, right? But they do. But why does a child take medicine? So one reason could be because they want to... Well, what do you guys say? What are the reasons why? Why would a child take medicine? Feel better. Okay, good. It will make them feel better. That's a good reason. Somehow, that doesn't quite work though, right? Okay.
Mommy or daddy told them.
Okay, to please mommy or daddy, right? They want mommy or daddy to please or not get punished, whatever it is, not get punished, whatever it is, because mommy and daddy, to make them happy, to make their parents happy, that's what their parents want, then they want to please their parents. Okay, good. Any other reasons why? Come on, how do you guys make your children take medicine? Okay, so let's say... Okay, so force or bribes, right? Okay, fine. Okay, so good. So basically, so let's take the first one. The first one could be because you want to please a mommy, let's say, right? So that would be an analogy of the... And in a certain sense, that is a certain thing. It's like almost like... And this is a mindset. A child just is doing it almost because of the parent. Right? They're not doing it for themselves. They don't even know whatever. The parent wants them to do it. They'll make the parent happy. And I think that is a way that people relate to mitzvahs, is that they're just doing it because God said so, and we want to make God happy. That's one way that people relate to mitzvahs. Make Hashem happy. Hashem will be proud of you. Hashem will make Him happy. Is that a Torah idea? Or what's... Not a
bumper sticker. Well, it is a bumper sticker. Hashem loves me.
Okay, well, what's the problem? What's the problem with that? It's that idea of that just doing it, not necessarily nothing to do with me, it's just because I want to make Hashem happy. Or I want to give Hashem, you know, like a parent does it for, you know, a child does it for a kid. What's the problem with that? I think we, even if, look, some people think that, some people may not actually believe that, but somehow feel that way. Right? It's not a matter of what we hold is true, is better sometimes than how we feel and what is our modus operandi of what we're, you know, the way we function. But what's wrong with that? Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, this is not for God. Hashem has no needs. He created man. He doesn't need man. He doesn't need us to make him happy. He made the whole universe. He's not in need of our approval or anything like that. Maybe he doesn't have feelings in the way that. So it's like, where a parent might need the child to take medicine, and that might be true. The parent does, they're going to be upset, and the child senses that the parent wants it, and the child wants to make the parent happy. But the parent is a person and has needs, just like a child has needs, and therefore it is a certain type of mentality of do it for the parents. But even that's an immature type of way of taking medicine, right? Someone says, I take medicine because it takes care of my mother's needs. I mean, that's not really why you take medicine, right? That's maybe for a child who doesn't understand, that's a way to do it. But there's a higher level than that. And I think with Torah, that is sometimes we feel we're doing it for Hashem. But that's not an idea. That undermines the idea that Torah has of Hashem, that he doesn't need us. And we're not going to harm him. Well, then, other than doing it for the parent... So then the other reason we could take medicine would be for ourselves, right? The child could take medicine for themselves. But for themselves has two types of ways. One is for ourselves because I'll get a reward, a bribe, or avoid the punishment. That's like one class, which means I'm taking the medicine because the medicine will be a vehicle, a tool of me to get a reward, to avoid a punishment, right? And then the other... higher way to relate to take, more advanced, more mature way to take medicine, is I'm going to take medicine because it's going to actually benefit me and it's going to make me feel better, right? Because actually the medicine is good for me and it's going to bring me to health. So forget the bribe. Maybe there's a bribe, maybe there isn't a bribe, but whatever. That's not what's important. Then probably once our kids grow up to a certain age and they develop maturity, you don't have to bribe them or force them to take medicine anymore. They realize that their medicine is going to make me feel better and they've experienced that, and as such they're able to relate to it in a more mature way. And I think the analogy carries through to mitzvahs, is that the first way of relating to mitzvahs is wrong, because he can't be benefiting Hashem. Hashem doesn't need us to benefit him, he created us. But rather, the mitzvahs are for us. But within doing mitzvahs for us, and there's a long Ramban who talks about this, and he says everyone agrees with this. This is in by Shiloh HaKan. If anyone wants a source, I can show you. He gives a lot of chazals that back it up. But within the idea of doing mitzvahs for us, there are still two ways to relate to it. One way to relate to it is like the idea of a bribe or a punishment, which is, there is a truth to it, is that if we do the mitzvahs, there are rewards associated with doing the mitzvahs and there are punishments associated with violating the mitzvahs. And that is true. But there's more than that. The Torah, besides for that being true, and that is a motivating factor for sure, especially when we first are getting into Torah. But there's also the fact is that the Torah is like the medicine. In fact, there's a part of Gemara that says the Torah is like a tablet, it's like a medicine. It compares it to that. But the idea is that the Torah actually is good for us, and it benefits us in a way that medicine makes us feel better. The Torah makes us better. And that's, I think, when I initially asked why we do mitzvahs, most of you, a lot of you were giving reasons, different facets of how it's good for you. But I think the general idea is, it's important to realize and relate to it that the Torah is good for us. Because when we do so, then if we're in struggle about, we have a conflict, maybe I shouldn't do the mitzvah. If we don't do a mitzvah, we're not harming anybody else. I mean, primarily we're harming ourselves. So it's helpful for us to be able to, it would be like a kid to say, okay, mom, I'm not taking the medicine, I'm mad at you. They're not harming the mom. I mean, maybe they are, but here they're not harming Hashem, and it's ultimately harming yourself. And I just want to cite a pasuk, two psukim, that just say this openly, just to make clear that it's what the Torah holds, is Hashem tells us two places in Devarim where He says the mitzvahs are for us. He says, "Vayitzaveinu Hashem lasos es kol chukim ha'ila." Hashem commanded us to do all these chukim. "Le'yiras Hashem Elokeinu," to fear God. "Le'tov lanu kol hayamim," to be good for us, to do good for us for all the days. "L'chayusenu kayam hazeh," to give us life like we have on this day. So le'tov lanu. And then once again, also on Dvarim, Pasuk says, "V'ato Yisrael mashal makach shol meimach." What does God ask of you? "Kiyin le'yiras Hashem Elokecha," just to fear God. "L'leches b'chol derachav," to go in all His ways. "U'la'avo," so to love Him. "L'avod es Hashem Elokecha b'chol avavcha b'chol nafshecha," to serve Him with all your heart and all your soul. "Lishmar es mitzvos Hashem Elokecha," to guard all His mitzvos. "Asher nuchim tzavcha hayom," that I command you. "L'tov lach," for your good. Okay? So, and this is a theme which comes out a lot in the Torah. Torah is life. Going away from the Torah is death. There's bracha and klala, tov. But the idea is the Torah is for our good. Okay? Now, how is it for our good? So there's a lot of different answers to that. And it's a study. Each and every mitzvah, there's different facets, and all the things you guys were saying are valid points, and each of them could deserve a full discussion in their own right. But I wanted to talk tonight specifically about this idea of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which I talked about before, which is that there's no truly free person but for someone who's involved in Torah mitzvahs. And the idea is that Torah gives us freedom. Okay? And freedom is an important part of life. But how so? Maybe let me go back to that question. How does Torah give us freedom? Why isn't that Torah gives us servitude and makes us have all kinds of demands on our life? How is it that Torah gives us freedom? Where is the freedom in all these laws and all these rules and all these fast and I can't eat this and this, right? All different. Sure, we have a list. Everyone has different mitzvahs that are challenging. It's difficult for them. We don't feel free. We feel restricted. Good for us, yes, but free? Why free? Right? And not only that, why is there no truly free person besides for one who keeps Torah? Why is that? Why can't you have free people? A lot of free people. Okay? Someone? How are we doing on the phone? Everyone here okay?
They're muted.
Yeah, have to wait 5 seconds.
Yeah, good, thanks.
Okay. Yes, I see.
Every person has, lots of impulses. They just want to do stuff all the time. And if you're keeping mitzvahs, you have a chance to rein it in and give yourself freedom from having to, by strengthening your self-control and your awareness, it gives you freedom from just playing at whatever just comes at you in your life.
Okay. Good. Good. Yes, Enda.
If you're engaging in a difficult course of study or difficult challenge in your job or in your life, and part of it is always knowing, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing?
You
have a huge amount of freedom to know, this is maybe hard for me to do it, but the right way is written out for me.
Right.
That takes a tremendous
amount of
weight off.
It's true. It's true. It just reminded me of something my mother. I remember when my grandmother was, I think it was my grandmother, she was ill. Maybe it was my grandfather also. And they're in the hospital, and there's all these, I'm sure, unfortunately, a lot of people face these types of issues, the DNR types of decisions, and there's a lot of shilas. And these are very, very hard decisions, stressful decisions. And I remember that at the time when we had these shilas, I remember we had called Rabbi, and I think he had called Rav David, and my mother took a lot of happiness in the fact that Hashem made these decisions, and there's the Torah gives us guidance on these types of things, and that's kind of your point. You're saying there is a route towards, we know there is a path which we could solve all many of our problems in life. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay. Someone else. Yeah, okay, so I think what's the idea which is good is that there could be two types of servitude which a person could have. And I think the one type of servitude is a servitude from without, from the outside. One could have a taskmaster. One could have actually a master, like a slave and a master. Or one could be controlled by some sort of external force which is telling them always what to do. A boss, right? And we feel like a slave to whatever, whoever it is, the authority who's on top of us. And in that sense, we might think of the Torah as being that we're servants. And in that, in a certain sense, that's, we are called servants of God. Because after all, God does tell us what to do and we're bound by His mitzvahs. And in that sense, I think that's the sense of the question. There is an external force outside of us, that sort of being outside of us who's telling us what to do. And that, in a sense, does carry with it a degree of servitude. And not, that's the question, how is Torah free? It's service, it seems like, if anything, it's restrictive. But then there's the other type of taskmaster, which is even a greater type of taskmaster, is the internal taskmaster, or the internal boss, which is the impulses, the parts of our personality which control us, which don't let us pursue that which we know is really good for us. And that's what I thought this example in the multitasking and in the cell phones and in the, all the technology things is a good example. Is a good example in the modern day world. I think most of us realize that we are, in a certain sense, we're slaves to our cell phone or whatever it is. And this, I think what this article is saying is no chiddush, and it doesn't, but it rings true. But despite that, it's very difficult for us to control these things, right? It's very difficult to control our impulses, right? Whether it be a cell phone or it be anything in life, is that a person is oftentimes becomes addicted to a cell phone, to alcohol, to food, to whatever, to work, to money, to fame, towards pettiness, towards fighting, whatever. There's a million things we become addicted to in our life. And whether the word addiction is the exact word we would use, I don't know, whatever. Sometimes you would, sometimes you wouldn't. But we become servants to our own impulses. And why is that? Why would you call that a servitude? Because someone might say, well, what do you mean? I'm just doing what I want. Right? In what sense is it, in what sense is it legitimate to call that like a servitude?
It's not what you want to do. You can't stop it without
controlling yourself. Okay, good. It's not what you want. Right.
It's not good for you.
It's not good for you. Right. It's not good for you. You know, yeah?
I think if you ask someone, like, you want to be on your phone your whole life,
right. 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 It's not what you want. It's not what's good for you. It's not what, which if you take a step back and you think about it, you realize it's not good for you. And you can understand why it's not good for you. And you could give an argument like this if you're talking to somebody else and you could pull yourself out of an addiction for a moment. You could talk about it. You could see why it's not good. But at the same time, we get caught in these things. And we could see that which is good for us, but yet we can't, somehow we can't control it. Right? I take an extreme example or whatever is actually like an addict, whether it be drugs or alcohol. The person could see how let's say the alcohol to destroy their life totally. Destroys all their family, everything. But at the same time they know it's bad for them, but they can't control it. And that's really a true servitude. And everybody has their own things. For some people it might be alcohol, some people might be cell phones. Everyone knows their own things, so it's their own impulses, their own things which they know that it harms them, but then at the same time they can't control it. And this is part of the struggle of life. And as I was saying, there's no, in a sense, you could say there's no truly free person. And that's the first half of the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, there's no truly free person. But it says, Ela Misha Osik B'Torah. Okay, so it seems that Torah, among other things, Torah is a solution to this problem, or is a route towards a solution to this problem. It's a route towards giving us freedom. How so? Okay, we've identified the problem, but how so? Why is that the case? Well, actually, let me actually tell you a quote here. This is another quote I forgot I wanted to say. This is a short one. But one of the greatest ways to find joy is to spend a half a day or a whole day on a technology fast. That means no screen time. None. Right? So, that rings true to Shabbos, right? But what's the point? Why is that? But who does that? Does the person who wrote this article do that? Like, it's a nice thing. One of the great ways to find joy. I doubt it. Okay? Why? Yeah?
Well, I think Rabbi's idea of mitzvah is that you keep your mind with what's in charge.
change everything else. So if your mind is what's in charge of you, then you're making your own decisions rather than being pulled in all different ways.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah?
It's kind of like the first step in the 12-step programs when you have an addiction is to admit that there's a higher being that cares about you and wants you to do what's best for you.
Okay.
So it's like if you have this addiction to your cell phone, it's so hard for you to say to yourself, even though I know it's good for me, I have to put that aside for a half a day and just not use that phone.
Right.
But if you have a concept that there's a creator who cares about you and wants you to do what's best for you, it's much easier if there's a higher being that's telling you, put that aside for Shabbos and don't use it.
Right.
It's like, you know, with kosher, it's like as soon as I find out that something is not kosher, I have like no time for it at all. But all of a sudden, if it's like, you know, sitting out here in front of me, I'm eating too much of it. So it's just a certain concept that prevents you from going after your impulses when otherwise you would be running after them.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good. You're right. That's definitely one aspect is that we can't. It's a nice thing to say, I'll make a half a day technology fast or whatever, but it just, no one does that. It just, I don't know, maybe someone in the world has done something
like
that.
There's
like
a movement for it, which I think is so funny, because we have Shabbos, so like it's just,
exactly.
Like I can't wait to put my phone away, even though during the week I can't let go of it.
I look forward to totally
shutting it down.
So two things about that which make it possible and make it more meaningful, I think, and that's, there's one thing Shayala was saying, another thing Shira was saying, is that first of all, it's very hard to, on your own, decide to do things like this. It just doesn't quite work. So I don't know exactly why, it just doesn't. And maybe you do once, but then, you know, it's just not, it's not sustainable, it's not a way of life. It just doesn't work. When you have a mitzvah, when you have the Torah, which has the rules, it's like, it's very nice to say, I'll control myself, but you need sometimes an outside source that's helping you control you by making rules and by having restrictions. It allows you to get control. It would be like a person who has an alcohol problem is they may have to go to a rehab facility because they can't just say, I'm not going to drink for a month. How are they going to do that? That's the problem. That's not a solution. That's the problem. But if they have, let's say, a rehab facility they may do, which prevents them, they just can't, well, then they have an external force which is preventing them. Now, is that rehab facility enslaving them or freeing them? So it's freeing them, right? It might, in the short term, be enslaving them and preventing them and restricting them and all that, but it's allowing them to gain control over their impulse. It's allowing them to break free of the addiction and to be able to get truly free. But sometimes a person needs the external restriction, the external obligation, in order to get us to... And the fact that it's a mitzvah and that we've been brought up with it and that there are rewards and there are punishments. It's just whatever it is, there are emotional motivations for us to do mitzvahs. The person doesn't want to be a sinner, whatever it is. But bottom line is that allows us to overcome these things. So for example, the Shabbos example is most people would not be able to do this half day thing. But also most people aren't going to be playing with their phones on Shabbos because we don't do that. It's Shabbos. Well, why would we do that? That's, you know. And I think another point is also, is what Shira mentioned, it's not, like this thing is like, what are you going to do? You're just going to, for half a day, you're just not going to use your cell phone? Then what are you going to do? Like, what are you doing when you're bored? What are you going to do when you're waiting for the bus? What are you doing yesterday? Like, what is it? Why, it's like hard to justify. Why exactly am I not using my phone at this very moment? It's like, well, I might as well just use it right now, and then later, when someone comes, I'll check, right? Which is kind of these things, there's no content to it. It's just more of like a general idea. But if you have something like Shabbos, a mitzvah is something which talks to us on a higher intellectual level. We could study the mitzvah. We could say, it's Shabbos now. We're thinking about Hashem. We're thinking about the fact that Hashem created the world. We're involved in Oneg Shabbos. The halachic system engages us in a way, in a world of ideas, in a world which the mitzvahs are designed by Hashem in a way which satisfies us, which engages us on various levels, and it allows us, it's like the restriction is not just a no, but there's a yes and there's a positive idea and there's content to it, so that the restriction now becomes, it gives us back our humanity. It's not just a restraint, but on the contrary, it's a redirection of our energies towards higher objectives, towards ideas, towards the benefit of the mitzvahs, whatever Shabbos is one example. So this is one example, but I think it might be this idea. I don't know if every mitzvah is like this, but I think many mitzvahs are like this. Many mitzvahs are designed, among other reasons. Again, there's various multiple reasons and benefits of different mitzvahs, and that we could exhaust. And I don't think Shabbos is there, so we're not addicted to our cell phones. It's a benefit of Shabbos, but that's not the reason or whatever. But it's a benefit of Shabbos. So it might be wise for us to get up to appreciate. I think it's valuable for us to relate to the mitzvahs as things which are for our benefit. And to be able to identify a strong, a concrete benefit helps us do the mitzvahs, to help us remember. The mitzvahs might feel at times burdensome, but at the same time for us to just, that's why I think even though these ideas might be familiar, it's good to review these because they come up and we get involved in our life and the mitzvahs do impose restrictions on us. And our attitude is important, especially maybe in raising kids. We want to, you know, convey the way, the proper way we relate to mitzvahs, and to convey that to them and to help inculcate that type of an attitude in them. So, and as such, it's nice to talk about this in the abstract, but it might be helpful if we could try to think of a few mitzvahs just to get in touch with this theme. A few particular mitzvahs which are benefiting us in this particular manner. Again, there are a lot of benefits of mitzvahs in general. I want to specifically talk about the benefit of the Torah in giving us freedom. Okay, so does anyone want to throw out, I have a few examples, but I'm sure you guys can come up with some more. And yes?
Maybe like tzedakah.
Okay, good.
In the sense that it seems like really annoying that you have to give away your hard-earned money, but in a way it could be really freeing because it forces you to be less attached to your possessions.
Yes, excellent. Yeah, right. Most people work hard for their money, and they become attached to their money in a way which isn't good for them, right? When a person can become stingy, they can't give a dime, they can't give gifts, they can't, whatever. There's a lot of stinginess is a very common trait, and people become so
egotistical. They think
it's their money, and I'm not going to let another person in any way. And that's, it caters to a person's pride and their sense of it's all me, and yeah, for sure. And but the mitzvah tzedakah is we have to give 10% of our money or whatever to tzedakah. And the fact that it's a mitzvah, it allows us, you don't feel, it's very hard. If there are no mitzvah, it's hard for people to give charity. But it's almost like if a person has a mitzvah tzedakah, they just know that's a mitzvah, that's what I do. So of course that's what I do. And they understand the idea of the mitzvah tzedakah and they recognize they're part of a klal and they're part of a world and there are other people who have needs. And the mitzvah itself allows us to be able to part with our money. But it allows us to give tzedakah, but it just allows us, besides for the tzedakah itself, we end up being less attached to every last penny which we have because we're able to freely give. And that itself will make us less enslaved by our need to hold on to our money, which some of us have. Again, different people have different attitudes. Some people don't have this need, some people are happy to just let their money go, or whatever. But some people are very attached to hoarding their money and not giving 1 cent and not, you know. And the mitzvah tzedakah definitely helps us break that addiction and break that attachment. Yeah, perfect. Okay, someone else? Another example?
Tznius.
Okay. Elaborate.
I think there's a natural inclination to want to be viewed as a sex object.
Okay.
And I think that tznius kind of forces you to rein it in and like realize that that's not really what it's about and who you are.
Right.
Just the physical, like I like just this desire to like, you know,
or even just
to look a certain way.
Right.
And that kind of takes it.
Right. I mean, it forces you to control that
in
a way which, without a mitzvah, without halachas, would be very hard to do. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you could appreciate the benefit, the fact that we don't become enslaved to that whole way of life of just wanting our bodies like that. What's that?
For covering here, too.
Yeah, right. The same thing. It kind of gives us, allows us to keep a perspective about ourselves and not to get caught up in that whole world, which many people in the world are involved. That's the whole thing, is just showing off their bodies and whatever. It's the fact that it helps us keep perspective and liberates us from that. Okay, good. Good. Okay. Someone else? Any other example? Any other mitzvahs then?
Kashrus.
Okay, kashrus. Kashrus eating, right? So eating is certainly the type of an area that a person is impulsive about. And as a you know, could be totally addicted to eating or whatever, right? And the fact that kashrus itself allows us to, before we eat, we have to make sure it's kosher, and that itself makes us, we don't just follow every impulse. And in theory, that could help us. I don't know if there's a correlation between people who eat kosher and weight.
You find their ways around it.
Especially in today's world, it's easier. But in theory, the idea of that we don't just engage in our instinct, in our appetitive, right? And that's, I guess, Nida is in the same boat. Nida kashrus is like that. When we're involved in our physical nature, we do have a check. Before we engage in our physical nature, we're able to think and make sure that it's kosher, Nida, whatever it is, and that itself allows us to become not so steeped in the physical, right? In eating and sexual, and right? Okay, good. Yeah.
Could be that a positive mitzvah, like say eating on a chag or like kiddush on Shabbos, it directs those energies in a way that also allows you to partake in it in a directed way.
Mm-hmm.
Would that like fall in the same
category? That's interesting. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You're saying it's like you could restrain your appetitive, but it's not just a matter of appetitive is bad. On the contrary, Simchas Yom Tov and Shabbos, it's good. So, I mean, it's more that we relate to it as something that's measured. Like eating is not, there's nothing wrong with eating, everyone eats, you're supposed to eat, eating's good. But let's say in the modern world, eat healthy, don't not eat, but eat healthy, think before you eat, don't just eat things that are bad for you, and know how to enjoy food in a good way. So similarly, the Torah, you're right, directs us away from, let's say, indulging, but at the same time, on the contrary, it tells us to indulge. So the answer is, depends what we're doing. If we're involved in Simchas Yom Tov and Shabbos and helping us think about ideas of, and to enjoy the Yom Shabbos or Yom Tov, then that's good. On the contrary, if we're involved in pursuing pleasure, you know, without thinking, then that could be bad. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the freedom, is being able to engage, yes, at certain times, and no at other times. That's part of the freedom. Yeah. I mean, otherwise, in a sense, you could become enslaved to the other thing. There are people who are slaves to asceticism and to guilt, right? You could be a slave to your guilt, the guilty conscience, that a person can't enjoy anything because they feel too guilty, and that's another type of a slavery, right? Some people become, have just that type of a complex.
So you can't give too much dukkha.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there's opposite midos, and all these midos, the Rama has the two extremes. But a person could become a slave of the other superego types of traits, and the mitzvahs will take us away from those as well, and thereby prevent us from being getting caught up in that type of religious, totally religious, self-denying mentality. Definitely, that's true. Vow celibacy, that type of thing, right. But that's oftentimes with people. I mean, different people, see, it's amazing, is the mitzvahs are designed in a way that talk to all people, and different mitzvahs talk to different people's vices and whatever. One person is an ascetic and they're a celibate and they feel guilty to be involved in anything physical. Another person, on the contrary, is totally involved in a pleasure beyond belief. So the Torah helps us find the middle ground, and it talks to different people. Like the money thing, the tzedakah thing, some people have no problem giving. And mitzvah tzedakah might be easy for them, other people don't. But there's a range of mitzvahs. But I would think in general, the mitzvahs which are difficult for you personally are probably indications that these are areas where you need work, and they can help you in that area. Instead of being pained about it, on the contrary, look at it as an opportunity to help free you from your addiction to whatever the case is, and to help give you that freedom, which will make you happier. Yes, Elise?
I was just thinking that there's a certain type of freedom in thinking about something in a different way. Like you have a certain, everybody has like a certain kind of vision of how to see the world.
Right.
And sometimes maybe,
yeah,
if you have trouble in a certain mitzvah, or
right,
you know, the Torah kind of gives us like a different way of seeing it that
right,
we respect naturally, or we're supposed to respect naturally,
right,
and then by kind of breaking out of our own little dogmas, that's a certain type of freedom that really is
that's
helpful in life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I was even thinking in terms of like just learning Torah.
Right.
Everyone has all these pursuits they want to learn their whole life, and someone could spend their whole life without thinking about their like existence or how they got here, where they're going in the world in that way.
Right.
And by having the mitzvah to learn Torah, they're almost forced to think about
that. Right. That's true. I mean, oftentimes sort of this self, this the servitude comes from an unexamined life. We caught in certain ways of thinking. Yeah, the part of the impulsiveness is because we don't think about things. And that's what kind of gets us caught in our small, right, Dalai Lama's way.
And there's a certain, I mean, we have it, like, more globally also, not just individually. Like, we think there's a certain firm world that, like, you have to fit into.
There's
a certain, you know, it doesn't, there's another way of thinking.
Right, for sure. I mean, but Torah challenges us to think and to question our assumptions throughout Torah and mitzvahs in general. It's about, Torah is a major focus on learning Torah, and learning Torah causes us to think about every aspect of our life and every aspect of the world, and that itself liberates. Like, you know, it's hard to become liberated if you don't if you're not thinking. And the fact that all the mitzvahs involve thinking, it causes us to question our premises, and these premises are oftentimes what does enslave us. So, yeah, definitely learning is a big part of it. Studying the mitzvahs, when we have, if you have difficulty in the mitzvah, it might be valuable not just to follow the halacha, but to study the halacha, to understand it, to try to look into it, ask someone, whatever, find out. Maybe there's a, I don't really understand the benefit of the mitzvah or what the mitzvah is about. Maybe that would help us, you know, have a different perspective on it. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, good. Someone else? How about, I feel like a good one is like Lashon Hara, or that whole, you know, way that we relate to other people. Hanaas and other things like making fun of people. That whole, there are halachos guiding, restricting how we interact with other people. They're not the Lachadero mitzvahs, right? And oftentimes people do become addicted to Lashon Hara, to gossip, to all these types of, you know, not putting other people down, raising yourself up. But there are halachos about this. Unfortunately, we're not, you know, not always as careful as we should be about them. But in theory, if we understand, if we study these mitzvahs and we try to learn these mitzvahs and try to, halacha does legislate things like this. This is another area which all too many people are caught up their entire life in the world of pettiness and competition with other people instead of, they're not involved in anything meaningful. It's just trying to get ahead of the next person for no reason whatsoever. Just, you know, and that's very impulsive and very, you know, saddening. It creates all kinds of anxiety and stress. And so many so stress in people's lives are because they get caught up in these things. But insofar as a person could work on themselves in this area of, like, let's say, not talking Lashon Hara, as hard as it is, it could be liberating. Imagine you wouldn't feel the need to always be undermining other people or, you know, talking about other people or whatever. You'd actually be able to focus on positive things in life and not to be involved in the all the stresses involved in all that. So that's, although it's difficult, but it is an area that we do often get caught up in, and the Torah helps us insofar as we, you know, try to keep the Torah, helps us avoid those problems. Yeah. Okay, any others? A fast day. We just had a fast day. That's like kind of, what's that? I guess the food that relates to the conscious type of thing, right? But, yeah, what would you say? Anything more about a fast day? Is it different than conscious, or is it somehow the idea of a fast day? Because that's something people feel is restrictive, and sometimes could be difficult for people, right? But
also, it's geared to do tshuva. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would necessarily sit down and, like, I'm going to sit down and do tshuva now.
Right, right.
Which is good for me, but it's not something I voluntarily do without the framework.
I mean, but it's a tightness. First of all, it makes your energy removed from the physical. You get a little weak. You kind of are able to direct your energies towards tshuva. Yeah. And Yom Tovs in general, Yom Tov, Chag, and Shabbos, they're times which are dedicated to be able to, and I guess that's what you're talking about, is positive, thinking about positive ideas. Right? The mitzvahs do direct us towards positive ideas, and we have times which allow us to think about these things. We don't say, like, Yom Kippur, and, you know, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, we think about these ideas, and Theory Pesach, we restrain our physical.
Kashrus in general, when we think of it like restriction, but really it's also that compassion that we don't, like the rice says, like not cook a calf in its mother's milk.
Right.
You know, like it's supposed to engender that thought, like idea that other living
compassion,
beings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Compassion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just about the
reaction. Yeah. Okay, good.
I don't think it's so relevant to us now, but I think Shmita, if we are in Israel,
oh, yeah, that's a good
a
point.
Huge freeing thing for the whole society.
Right. You mean the work? It's like a sabbatical. Yeah. Yeah, I have a sabbatical.
But like everyone in theory, like the entire society,
yeah, right,
not doing work and studying Torah for the year, and also you have to not really not selling produce, because right, a lot of people have trouble, and right, being more folks and how to deal with it in Israel.
Right, it's true. That's true. Right, how about the 3 weeks? Is that, you know? Could that, I mean, you know, maybe tie it to
bummer in the summer.
Yeah,
I do. I dread the lack of socialization, even though it's
not. Oh, socialization. Yeah. Okay, good. So is there a benefit to that somehow? Or?
Yeah.
How so?
It keeps us as a nation focused on the goal of Gula.
Right. That's true. Right. I mean, it gives us that perspective on our place in this society. Is this our ultimate place in society? What are we striving towards? Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure if it's the freedom thing, though, right? But it does seem to give us a perspective. You know, it depends how loose you want to be in this freedom thing. You can twist everything into it, but, you know. Yeah.
Well, if freedom means getting closer to truth and further away from distortion.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's exactly right. Yeah.
I think it could also be freedom, since you're talking about too, because, you know, it's impossible for us to stop doing something completely, let's say, like eating.
Yeah, right.
But when we do it for a short amount of time, you know, aside from, you know, the whole teshuva process and all that, we could also think of our relationship with, you know, eating and food and, like, how much time we spend invested, maybe even that's a bad example, but, like, you know, we could still reflect on it in a greater sense.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. That's, I guess, with a lot of the Yom Tov and times in the calendar. Just help us take away from our routine and allow us to focus on the different things. And this thing happens to be morning, the fact that we're sad that we don't have the Mikdash, but this, and every Yom Tov has that in general, is that we need somehow, we get caught up in our routine, and without days or events or times that help us, stop us to think about it.
Tefillah.
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
Break
from right.
Your
it should be
day.
Right. It should
not
be
craziness.
Right. You're right. But that gets to this multitasking thing. I think that's part of the thing. The fact maybe that idea about difficulty in Kavana and Tefillah kind of relates back to that thing, that multitasking. That our minds were always doing so many things at the same time, and thinking so many things. Davening is so hard because of that. But
now it's even harder with davening on the phone. Yeah. You get notification pop-ups while you're davening.
Yeah.
Put an airplane on.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. Okay. So the main thing, so the point, just to tie, bring it all together, is that I think it is valuable for us to think about things like this and to think about, to gain, to rethink our perspective on mitzvahs and not to just get in the, you know, it's like part of our routine and everything else is part of our routine, but it's valuable to think that the mitzvahs are for our benefit, specifically this benefit, but any different benefits, and, you know, may help us do them insofar as we have a proper perspective on them. And they're really there for us, to help us, to make us happier people, to give us a perspective on life, to free us, to help, you know. And I think that idea, it doesn't work without. Mitzvahs are designed by Hashem. And as you were saying, is to help us. It's like a guidebook to lead us along. You know, we don't need a 12-step program. We have the Torah. The Torah is a 613-step program or whatever it is. But, and I do think, talking back to my mother, Lashon, I think she really felt part of her blessings and part of what she felt, you know, joy in life about was Torah and Mitzvahs. She really related to the life of Torah. She felt fortunate to be able to appreciate what Torah had to offer and to be able to take the benefits of the Torah and to, you know, to be in a life and a family that was built around Torah. Part of yeshiva that, you know, that's built around Torah, and it's something which, you know, it was refreshing to see her attitude towards it. She didn't have that attitude of restriction or whatever, but, you know, Shabbos was special to her, and just in general, just all kinds of, her attitude towards Torah mitzvahs was something, one of appreciation, and she felt almost, remember, she felt like, almost compassionate for people who didn't. Or she got her address or this and that. She talked to different people and she saw their perspectives. And she did feel blessed and that she was a part of Torah Mitzvahs. And I think that's something we could, you know, for me and my family and whoever, you know, to whatever degree we knew her, hopefully we could take inspiration from that and, you know, think into it. And I think that that was a tool. That was one of the things that contributed to our happiness was staying focused on the present and enjoying the life which she had, which is largely centered around the Torah Mitzvahs. So, okay. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.